If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 674. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about piazzas and palaces and cisterns, beaches and basilicas and grottos as we go to Le Marche in Italy. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Italy. I'd like to welcome to the show Chantel and Giovanni from theitalianontour.com, and we're talking about a region in Italy that may not be on your map, and that is Le Marche. Chantel and Giovanni, welcome to the show, first of all, and how did I do? Did I pronounce it anywhere close to being correct?
I think you got it right.
Perfect.
And can you put it on a map for us? Where are we talking about? Because I had to look this one up.
Okay, so Le Marche is located in central Italy, mm-hmm. and it's on the east side, so it's on the Adriatic coast. So mm-hmm. if you're coming in from Rome, you're looking at about 3 hours east by car.
Okay, and none of, to me, the well-known cities in Italy are in this region, although you're just below San Marino, which I think a lot of people have either heard of or maybe collected their stamps or whatever. But why are we going to Le Marche?
Well, I think you want to come to Le Marche if you're really in search of an authentic experience. Le Marche is in central Italy, just like Tuscany is mm-hmm. and Umbria, which have become very popular over the years. But Le Marche, because of its location and also because of its geographical location with the Sibillini Mountains, it's not as easily accessible by train, and it also hasn't have so many outside tourism that you still have a really authentic feel when you go there. You're not coming to an area where there's lots of people that speak English. You're coming to an area where the Italians travel. So you really get to experience a slice of Italy like, say, Tuscany was 50 years ago.
Well, and you mentioned because of the Sibillini Mountains. So this is the range of mountains that goes down the length of northern Italy and keeps the tourists safely over there in Tuscany while you can have Le Marche for yourself.
Yeah, the Apennines, the Apennini, okay. as we call them. Yeah.
Excellent. And what kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for us?
Well, I would recommend a minimum of 7 days. Although it's not a well-known region, there's a lot to see and a lot that you can do in Le Marche. It's considered by many all of Italy wrapped up into one region. So we have 7 days that we think is a great start to get an experience of Le Marche and get a feel for our region.
Okay. And we should say you do run tours, as I understand, in the region too. I just want to put that out there so that we're not trying to hide anything from anybody. And so where are we going to start?
So we're going to start in Ascoli Channel, which is located in southern Limache. And to reach Ascoli Channel, we recommend either you come by car or there's a bus that takes you directly from Rome to Ascoli. And we recommend do not take the train or you'll be wasting a lot of time in the train. The train will take you double the time the bus does.
Okay. So we're starting way south on the border between, and I don't even know what the next region south is of Le Marche.
Abruzzo. On the border of Abruzzo, yeah.
Okay. And why are we going to Ascoli?
Ascoli is a really great base because it's surrounded by truffle country, wine country, and you can easily access the mountains and the seaside all within about half an hour to a 45-minute drive. So it's a really great place for people who want to not unpack and repack and be really rushed. It really allows for you to experience the area and get a feel for the local culture, because you can stay in one place and you can take lots of day trips from the area. You also can go into Abruzzo because it's not that far from Ascoli. So it really gives people a lot of options to see a variety of things when they're visiting Le Marche.
Okay. And what are we seeing specifically in Ascoli?
Ascoli is well known for having one of Italy's most beautiful piazzas called Piazza del Popolo. Every year we also have La Quintana, which is a medieval jousting festival that happens twice a year. It's the second largest medieval reenactment in Italy, with Siena's Il Palio being the biggest. Mm-hmm. It's a really great event for people to come and experience something unique. We have a lot of Italian tourists that come to experience La Quintana, which happens in July and August. So if you are coming to Le Marche in the summer during July and August, is a great time to visit and get to see this festival and be part of the festivities. Also, Ascoli is famous for olive ascolane, which are fried stuffed olives. And maybe I can have Giovanni tell you a little bit more about that, because during the Quintana, we also have a big festival called Fritto Misto, which is all about the fried stuffed olive.
Yeah, the fried stuffed olives, the olive ascolana, have been now protected by the DOP, a disciplinary in Italy. So like prosciutto or Parmesan cheese that you might know already. And they're a big part of, obviously, local food culture. And they have these festivals now that are, revolve around them twice a year in April and in July. So really good time to visit.
Well, and I'm trying to figure out, with La Quintana sounds like the fifth of something or whatever. What does the name come from?
I don't know exactly the name. I know that the medieval reenactment, it's a very old tradition from medieval times, and then it was taken back in 1954 after World War II. But I'm not sure of the name itself. But yeah, Quintana sounds like there is something of quinti, which is five or fifth of something, but I'm not sure of the origin of the word.
Well, in my confusion is that it's competing the six different districts against each other, and something's not working here for me. Yeah.
I don't think it has to do with the number of districts, though.
Okay.
Because actually, if you come to Quintana, and when you come when there is a big parade, you see that there's more than just the main districts in Ascoli that participate. There are also outside towns that are not actually within the sestiere of Ascoli that do also compete. And each sestiere or quarter, they each have a dama, a woman who it kind of represents the quarter, in addition to a jouster, I guess you would call it, a man who rides the horse and does the jousting. These are normally professional jockeys, essentially, that do it. You'll see when you come, there's a big parade and it's like a week-long celebration. There's flag throwing. It's a really big thing. Like, people get really excited and they're really proud of their quarter, and they're really proud of the women that they select to represent each quarter. And actually, for a woman to take part as a dama of one of the sestiere, it is a big investment because the medieval garb or outfit, it cost like starting at 2,000 euros for this outfit and easily up to 5,000 euros. So it's a one in a lifetime event for these people. And it's a really big deal. So they take a lot of pride in it.
So jousting. So let's get back to that because I haven't gotten over that yet. That sounds dangerous. First of all, you're knocking people off a horse with a lance just in the traditional medieval way?
Not quite.
Okay. I figured there might be some European rule against that now, but what is going on?
It's not a person against another person.
Okay.
I don't know if it was like that at some point, but they have to go around a figure eight in a stadium in the center of Ascoli. They do that nine times overall, and three, three, and three, and then they have to hit certain spots.
Hits certain spots. So they still are holding a lance and they're trying to collect rings on the lance or something like that?
Yeah, rings and also just hitting circles that are at different points.
Okay, all right. So it still keeps some of the original form of jousting. I think that was how they did some of the practice jousting, but with less of the mayhem.
Yes, yes.
Huh. Nowadays, they just use a dummy. They have like a dummy with a target and they have to hit it.
Interesting. This is not something I'd heard of and sounds fascinating. Are there other things we want to do while we're in Ascoli, either for the festival or other times of the year? Oh, the festival again is when?
The festival nowadays happens the second weekend of every July and August.
Oh, the nice warm months when it's so pleasant to be in Italy.
Well, you can imagine these women dressed
up. Oh my gosh, I hadn't thought of that.
Gowns, right? It's quite crazy, but they do it. They're passionate about their tradition. What else I would recommend for Ascoli? I think anybody visiting Ascoli, it's a really great and walkable city, and I would recommend that people take a walking tour, whether it's with us or with another local guide, but we really think it gives people a good perspective of the town because Ascoli used to be a town of 100 towers and it's also the town of travertine. The whole city is covered in travertine.
So the white marble that we're used to associating with Italy. Mm-hmm.
But actually white is not the preferred color. They prefer the golden color. Quite stunning, like, you know, when you think of the golden hour when the sun's coming down, it has almost like a honey tone to it. It's very beautiful. So I do recommend that people actually take a walking tour to visit our Duomo, which is situated in Piazza Rengo. So Ascoli has two main piazzas. It has Piazza del Popolo, which is a square of the people, which most Italian towns have a square of the people. And it also has Piazza Arengo. And Piazza Arengo was where the Roman Forum was back in the day. And something very unique and interesting about Ascoli that I've learned since moving here is that Ascoli is actually a city older than Rome. And the Ascolani, the people from Ascoli, have a saying, "Quando Ascoli era Ascoli, Roma era Pascoli," which means that when Ascoli was Ascoli, so when Ascoli was at the height of its power, Rome was just a pasture. So it's something that we always like to tell our people that come visit us and give them a bit of a story, an idea of how proud the Ascolani were, and they were a very powerful city during their time.
Now, and I'm the history guy, so I have to ask, was this a Etruscan city or was it part of the Magna Graeca, a Greek city?
Magna Graecia. Yeah, okay. not part of the Etruscan.
Got it. I thought it would be too far east. That's what I was wondering.
Yes, okay. You're correct. A lot of the eastern towns are not a kind of, not that you can draw a line, but Umbria is kind of where it stops in the area here.
Okay. Other things we want to do in Ascoli?
Absolutely. I think everybody should visit Cafe Maletti. Cafe Maletti is one of Italy's 150 historical cafes. It's a beautiful cafe that's done in Liberty style. It used to actually be the post office, but was converted into a cafe.
And you say Liberty style. I don't know what that is.
So Liberty, at least in Italy, we refer to a time period normally late 1800s.
Okay, when you gained your independence, became a nation. Yeah. Okay, got it.
To 1920s.
So this would be, in England, we would call that Georgian style. We're talking about that same time period. Got it. Okay.
Absolutely. This was also a favorite place that Ernest Hemingway used to come and write when he visited Ascoli. And Cafe Maletti was also in the movie with Dustin Hoffman. I don't know if you know it. It's not very well known, but it's called Alfredo Alfredo. And that was a movie that he filmed in Ascoli. So it's got a little bit of, you can go there if you're a movie lover and sit in the same cafe. And if you love poetry, you can also sit in the same place and have a what we call a cafe corretto, just like Ernest Hemingway did. So a cafe corretto is a coffee that we say is kind of corrected with a little shot of liqueur. And in this case, it's anise Maletti, which is the typical liqueur that is made in Ascoli from the family of the Maletti family. So it's very famous in our area. They do chocolates with the liqueur inside and different desserts. It's a digestivo, so a digestif.
Well, and I think we would have been surprised if you said he had anything other than liquor in his coffee, but...
Absolutely.
So you mentioned the Duomo, and I forgot to stop and make sure that everybody understood when we talk about the Duomo in Italy, literally we're talking about the dome, but this is the cathedral or basilica, I assume, in Ascoli, a cathedral?
Yes, in Ascoli, it is the cathedral, and it's dedicated to Sant'Emidio. Sant'Emidio is our patron saint of Ascoli.
Apparently, the name of Quintana, as far as they can tell, does come from the original five quarters of the city that took part, or the five districts of the city, and now there are six, is what I'm finding for where that name comes from, they think. It's far enough, it's old enough that we're not quite sure of the origin. I just had to figure that out.
That would make sense because Borgo Solesta, which is the sixth sestieri, that one was later added. It's more of a newer part of Ascoli, even though it's not essentially newer. We are in Italy. Everything's old.
It's newer, like Rome.
Yes.
Excellent. What else are we going to do in Ascoli?
Well, something that is really unique and you can only access with a private guide is a visit to what we like to call our mini Petra. And it's where they found the catacombs of Sant'Emidio. And it's a little church that is basically built inside the mountains right outside of Ascoli.
Okay.
Maybe Giovanni can tell us a little bit more about
that. Yeah, it's built inside the bedrock. It's very small, but worth a visit.
Okay. And catacombs, so this was originally where people were buried.
Yes. And they believe it was where Sant'Emidio was buried. Because they found, normally when you find a small child buried next to a person, it's significant that it was a saint or somebody who was seen as very important. So they found the catacombs of a man buried next to a child. So it became dedicated and they assumed that it was Sant'Emidio. And that is how they came to build a church there.
Okay. And we're talking about someone who is a third century Christian bishop and martyr. I don't know Sant'Emidio. That's a new one for me. Patron saint of the city, maybe?
Of earthquakes.
Of earthquakes.
So
okay.
In all areas around the world where there is seismic activity, like California, you will find
California
Sant'Emidio.
Well.
Yes.
Huh. Okay.
So
I don't know my patron saints, apparently.
Something I learned when I moved here. So it's really cool when you go visit there. They actually have a map of all the areas around the world where Sant'Emidio is the patron saint.
Good to know.
All seismic areas.
Where next?
I would suggest that if you have a car, you head to the Piceno wine region and visit one of Italy's most beautiful medieval villages called Ofida. Ofida has a very unique church called Santa Maria della Rocca. And this church is very unique because when you look at the outside, it looks like you know, when you normally enter a church, you think you're going to enter and it's going to be grandiose and the ceilings are going to be high. Mm-hmm. But when you enter, you actually enter and the ceiling is very low, because what it originally was a castle. Mm-hmm. And the owner, or the landowner at the time of the castle who had it, his sons both became monks, and he dedicated the castle to the church and it became a monastery. And they later made it into a church because he couldn't actually give down his inheritance to his daughter. So he decided to dedicate it to the church, since his sons had both decided to become monks. It's a very unique medieval church. The frescoes inside are representative of the ruling class at the time, which was actually ruling class from Northern Europe.
Germanic, yeah.
Oh, okay. The Lombards.
Yeah, so you'll see frescoes of people who are blonde or strawberry blonde, reddish hair. Mm-hmm. They are not Italian. So that, because that they were the people who commissioned the paintings, and the paintings were representative of the ruling class.
Okay, I wasn't aware that they had come this far south in Italy. Interesting.
Yes, actually, in fact, there's quite a bit of influence from them, and you'll find in Ascoli, because I know most people think, oh, Italians are dark-haired and dark eyes, especially in central Italy still and southern mm-hmm. Italy. But we have a lot of people here who actually have blue eyes. And I think that's probably because of this infiltration from Northern Europe.
Mm-hmm. Well, you had the Normans come in to Southern Italy, Naples and Sicily.
Yeah.
And then you had the Lombards come in to Lombardy, oddly enough.
Yeah.
But one of the things that happened, one of the reasons why I, as an American, might think of Italians as being more dark-haired and such, is that most of the people who immigrated to the U.S. immigrated for financial reasons, economic opportunity, and they tended to be more from the South. They tended to have a more certain look, influenced by people coming in from the South more than people from the North.
Absolutely. That's very true. Most of the people that did come to the States are from Southern Italy. Mm-hmm. And even mm-hmm. Giovanni's family is originally from Puglia.
Mm, okay. The heel.
Yes.
Got it. And we have another show on Puglia, as we do in many other regions of Italy. One of the countries that probably have the most episodes per square mile, I think it would be Italy.
Yeah, it's so regionally diverse, and every mm-hmm. place is so different. It definitely deserves many episodes.
Right. Well, and even what we think of as Italian food in the U.S., well, first of all, is American Italian food. It's very Americanized, but it also does tend to be more influenced by food from the South than food from the North traditionally, but also then heavily changed depending
yes.
on what ingredients
yes,
you could find.
Very true.
And the case of pizza, I have to say improved, but you know, that is just an opinion.
Absolutely.
Excellent. What are we going to do next?
In Ofida, I would also recommend visiting the women who make the lace. They do, what is
Bobby
it called?
Lace.
Bobbin lace. Bobbin
okay.
lace. Mm-hmm. So this tradition of bobbin lace is something that was passed down from generation to generation. And it's very significant to the people of Ofida, because now they are trying to keep this tradition. But of course, young kids don't want to learn how to make lace.
It's
also very difficult.
Yeah.
Requires a lot of memory. You have to remember mm-hmm. each spool. It's actually quite amazing to watch these women make these intricate designs. But what it did was it really empowered women to be able to contribute to the family economically. Mm-hmm. So when the men were working in the fields, the women were able to make these beautiful lace tapestries and sell them as a way that they could contribute towards the family's income.
Mm-hmm. And it is fascinating to watch. I completely agree, because you're talking about with bobbin lace that you have maybe a dozen, maybe two dozen different bobbins, wooden, almost like wooden, long wooden top sort of thing with thread
yeah.
wound on them. And you're trying to put the right one in the right place. And it's mesmerizing to watch.
It's very cool. I actually got myself a pair of earrings because now they're thinking people want to bring things home and not everybody wants lace in their house. So they make some beautiful jewelry and they're great souvenirs because they're light and you just pack them up and you're able to bring some one of the kind earrings or bracelets back home with you. So it's a really great way for them to continue on this tradition and try to get travelers interested in what they do.
Very cool. Where to next?
Next, I would recommend visiting the theater at Ofida. In Ofida, theater was very important for people, and they don't have a large population, but they do have a tradition of theater. And it was also because the town was quite wealthy, and theater was seen as a place where you would go meet people. So people would have their specific box and it would be theirs. It was another place to socialize. And still to this day, in the wintertime and also in Ascoli, all our region in Limache, in the wintertime, we have a lot of opera or concerts and a variety of plays. And this theater is very unique because it is tiny and it's said to have the perfect acoustics. So when you visit, although there's no guide in English, but when we take guests, we're able to translate everything. You can learn a little bit about the theater. You can sit in there and listen to the acoustics. You can go on the stage. It's very unique because things are not off limits. And that's what's nice about Limache is that you can go to these places that maybe you'd normally go in a bigger town. I mean, I've traveled lots and you wouldn't be able to go backstage and see how the theater works or go in the seats when the theater's closed. And you actually get to do that. And it's really nice to go in there and actually see how a theater looks from behind the scenes.
Excellent. It's beautiful looking.
It's a stunning little theater.
It's only 360 seats. Yeah, Ascoli is over 1,000, and that's, from what I understand, an average size for, you know, we're a city of 50,000 in Ascoli. So, but Ofida only has 4,500 people, so pretty big theater for a small town.
Well, and for those of you who are looking for the theater, we're talking about the, I think we're talking about the Teatro Serpente Orio?
Yes, and it's in the main square of Ofida.
I don't know why a serpent makes it into the name of the theater, but okay.
It's actually inside the town hall. It doesn't look like a theater from the outside.
So after going through Ofida, two kind of options I would recommend is either if you're right on time for lunch, which in our side of Italy, because it's not touristy, lunch is around 1. There's a great restaurant there called Ofis, or you can go through Wine Country and go visit some of the wineries around the region and drink what we're famous for, which is Pecorino.
Yeah, so from Ofida, you can just kind of travel towards the water on the hills there. It's about a 30-35 minute drive, very pleasant. And on this road, the road of wine, as we call it, there are, you know, over 60 producers of wine, and some of them offer lunch and other activities. So definitely worth a stop on the way to the water.
And I am certainly familiar with something coming from the country called Pecorino, but not wine. I'm familiar with Pecorino cheese.
Yes.
Okay.
It has the same name. Huh. You're correct. Yeah, Pecorino is well known to be a cheese. We talked actually to the owners of a winery that we visit that were the original purveyors. So their father found the grapes in the mountains that are around 3,000 feet. A lot of animals are there kind of foraging throughout the year. So they think they gave it the name because of the animals maybe eating the cheese when they were there. So near the grapes, and they're not sure of why it has the exact same name. But
yeah, that they seem to say it was named for sheep. So maybe just because that's who was eating the grapes. Well, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yes.
And it's also has, they like to say that it's a red dressed in white, because it's a very bold white wine that can go with meat very well. It's a stronger, it's a bit higher alcohol wine. But if you're looking for something to bring to dinner party and you don't know what somebody's making, it's the perfect white wine because it goes with meat and fish and a lot of different food.
And it is a very old variety, is the other thing we should say. We're talking about an ancient wine in an ancient city.
Yes. Absolutely. The other wine also in our territory is Rosso Piceno, and we also have Passerina. And Passerina is a great wine to go with the Olive Ascolana that we told you about the
fried
previously.
Olives, okay.
Yes, it's perfect for what Italians like to have, an aperitivo. It's the perfect pairing for that.
Excellent.
After visiting wine country, we would recommend a nice visit to Ripa Tranzone. Ripa Tranzone is actually known for having Italy's narrowest alleyway.
Okay.
It's a medieval village. It's on the hilltops, and it's a nice little place to go to get a view, and you can also take some fun pictures in the alleyway. Also, it's very, very close to the water. So if you're feeling like you've had a nice long day and you want to head down to the water, you can head down to San Benedetto del Tronto, and there's a beautiful boardwalk, or like the Italians like to call, lungomare.
Okay.
It's a very popular place where a lot of Italians like to take their summer vacation. It's home to what we call blue flag beaches, which is a certain level of environmental quality. So if you're in Italy and you're looking, where should I take my beach vacation? You should select beaches that hit the blue flag mark, because you know that there's not a lot of pollution and their water's really clean. So that's a really great indicator of where you should stay if you're looking to stay on the coast.
Let's take a break here and hear from a sponsor, and that's mytravelcreditcard.com. I think it's clear that if you've been listening to Amateur Traveler that I love travel, but I don't love paying for travel, or at least I don't love paying extra for travel. That's why each day I help pay for my travel just by buying my groceries, my gas, and my gadgets. For a number of years now, my wife and I have used travel credit cards for our daily expenses. Then every year, we reap the rewards by using the points we earn to pay for airline tickets and hotel rooms. We get extra benefits along the way, like airline credit cards that let us waive luggage fees and hotel credit cards that give us a free night a year. Travel cards we use let us avoid foreign transaction fees when we travel overseas, which also saves us money. We pay these cards off every single month, and that's the smart thing to do. That way, other people are paying for our travel instead of the other way around. If you don't know where to get started, you can go to mytravelcreditcard.com, and we've picked a small number of great travel credit cards that I personally recommend, including the best starter card. Right now, the card I reach for first is from Chase, but if I find better cards, then we'll update mytravelcreditcard.com with our best picks. So check it out and let me know where you go with your points. Well, you mentioned the town that you mentioned on the coast there had a boardwalk. Are there good beaches if people are looking for a blue flag beach in the area?
All of San Benedetto, the beach along there is considered a blue flag beach.
Got it.
So San Benedetto is a town. Mm-hmm. And we do recommend, if you are going to the beach in Italy, that you rent an umbrella. Because unlike where I grew up in Canada, where you have washrooms and showers and other things, facilities by the beach that are public, there are no public facilities. So if you want to have access to a place to change, to wash the sand off your feet, you want to at minimum rent an umbrella.
Now, I'm not changing under the umbrella, but because I've rented an umbrella, I get access to the change room. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, you get access to the change rooms, bathrooms. Some of them include restaurants and meals. It depends like what you're going for. But if you're looking to have a beach vacation on the coast, that is what we recommend, is getting an umbrella. Well, that's the same thing we do.
Yeah, we haven't talked about that a lot when we've done episodes on Italy, because we actually haven't done that many talking about the beaches, strangely enough.
Yeah.
And the beaches are quite different in Europe in general and in Italy specifically, where... So, for instance, we just did an episode on California, and we said that 70% of the coastline was state beaches, public okay. land. And in Italy, it seems much more typical that you'll go to the beach and there'll be this section is a private area with the rent the umbrellas from this particular company or cafe or something like that. And it is a different experience often. And it's just something to know that. So that's helpful to know to rent an umbrella. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, actually, you were mentioning about California, obviously. But the beach is still a government-owned, as mm-hmm. you can imagine. But they're rented out mm-hmm. for a certain amount of years. And you can go to any beach, even a private one. You just can't go to the umbrellas, meaning nobody can kick you out if you're on there. It just okay. means you can't use the services.
Where to next?
Next, I would recommend going a little bit north and visiting Fanermal, the province of Fanermal and the capital of Fanermal, which is home to the largest Roman cisterns in Italy. And it's really, really unique. You get to go in the cisterns. And you get to actually walk inside the Roman cisterns, which keep about a temperature of 15 degrees Celsius. And Giovanni, you can give us the Fahrenheit.
About 58.
Okay. Year round.
The ticket is something around 5 euros and they have it multiple times a day to go in. So easy to visit.
It's important, though, to recommend that most of the tours there that they give are in Italian. So if you do go and you want to learn about the cisterns, you either need to book with a guide or book in advance to see if they're able to have an English-speaking guide give you a visit, because the visit is always guided at certain hours. So you should always check the hours beforehand, and you'd also need to request to have a guide, else you're just kind of going in there blindly. But it is truly worth the visit. It's a very unique site.
I've been in the cisterns in Istanbul, the Roman cisterns below the city, but nowhere else, I think. The big water collection
yep.
areas is what we're talking about, just in case anybody...
I've been told yeah. those are the largest in the world.
That could be. That they're pretty good size.
Yeah.
The odd thing with that one is those were undiscovered for 100 years after the Muslims captured the city. So these probably were less of a secret.
Yes. And nowadays they do lots of events for kids to try and bring people in, and they do like the escape room. So they have a lot of fun in the cisterns these days. If you're visiting Fermo, we also recommend visiting the theater, the Teatro L'Aquila, as well as the Mappamondo, which is basically a big globe. It's recently reopened
the map of the world. Okay.
Still, yeah, it's Mappamondo is like, you'd think like a big globe.
Okay.
When you go to Fermo, there's also a great little restaurant called Emilio's. But don't come there Saturday, because Saturday is his closing day. And it's very much an institution of the town.
Now, is there anything particularly I should remember to order besides the fried olives and the Pecorino wine when I'm in Le Marche?
In Le Marche, I would definitely say that if you're a pasta lover, you could order Vinci's Grassi, which is a very typical, it's kind of like a lasagna. It's okay. very typical of the area. You might not find it on many menus, but if you visit maybe an agriturismo, you will find it. And if you love meat, lamb is very popular on all the menus here, and it is excellent.
There's a big variation, like in many Italian regions, from north to south and east to west. So as soon as you get to the interior, it's a lot more meat-oriented, heavier dishes, and on the coast is fish broth and seafood. So okay. it really depends where you are.
Well, and depends on the time of year, too, in Italy. As a rule, things are served when they're in season.
Absolutely. And that's something I personally really love about living in Italy and being in Le Marche, is the seasonal change of the mm-hmm. food. A special season is truffle season, which is lovely because in our region, we are home to the truffle called Nero Pregiato. And that season normally starts in November and it is throughout the winter here. So you get a lot of plates with truffles on them. And what's great about our region, because it's not widely known, you can get truffles at a great price.
Okay.
If anybody wants to try it, it's a very unique experience. If any of the listeners haven't tried it before and you're in Italy, You can get truffle all over Italy, of course, but the central region and the northern region, like Piemonte and Tuscany, are very well known. But yeah, it's something very unique to try if you're a food lover.
Excellent.
Next thing I would recommend is visiting Loreto, the Basilica of Loreto. So the Basilica of Loreto is famous because they're said to have the house of where Jesus was born, the house of Nazareth.
Okay. I think I saw that in Nazareth, but
yes. But they have this story because they found a house that was carbon dated back to, which would be around the time Jesus was born. Mm-hmm. And it was found in the hills of the province of Ancona and in Loreto. So what they did was, the original story was that it was brought on the wings of angels to Loreto and they found the house there. But what they're saying is obviously more realistic is that it came here on a ship. And it was found in the countryside. So essentially, this large basilica is built around this house. And it's one of Italy's actually largest pilgrimage sites. And we welcome a lot of religious tourists throughout the year that come to what is considered a house of Jesus. Apparently, I think it's about 4 million religious tourists that come a year to Loreto that do the pilgrimage. And it's a very significant site for people. Twice a year, there's a pilgrimage walk from another town in Le Marche, which is about 26 kilometers. They go from Macerata to Loreto. So it's a very special place for Catholics coming from all over the world to Le Marche.
Okay, trying to keep the skepticism out of my voice, but that's very interesting.
Yes, it's very, like, if you come to the church itself, it's a stunning, stunning church. I've been to many churches or basilicas all over Italy, and this just really has, it's very ornate, beautiful gold. It has a lot of this blue with the gold stars. It's a beautiful basilica. Even if you're not religious, it's a great place to visit just to see it, because it really puts it in perspective when you think of like the work that went into this, like the life's work of many people that went into building this beautiful basilica. After you visit Loreto, Loreto actually isn't too far from what is called the coast of Conero. And the coast of Conero is home to many blue flag beaches, including a very famous one called Due Sorelle, the Two Sisters, that in the summertime you can take a little boat there to the beach because it's not easily accessible by foot. And you can spend the day at the Two Sisters Beach in the cove where we have Monte Conero.
Yes, yeah. Monte Conero is, if you look at the map of Italy on the east side, you'll see that there are two appendixes, as we call them here. So one is Gargano in southern Italy, the bigger one, and then there's Monte Conero. And it's a very important place geologically also because they found remnants of civilizations from between 30 and 70,000 years ago. And it's a protected national park. It's the first protected national park in the Marche. That was done in 1986. So a beautiful place to visit in general, especially if you like geology.
Okay. Well, and this looks like also the region that if I'm looking to take a ferry somewhere else across the Adriatic, this is the place I would go.
Absolutely. It's a great connection. You can connect from Ancona to Split in Croatia. Mm-hmm. I've personally taken it many times myself because my family's Croatian on my mom's side. So my grandfather goes back and forth on there and it's basically leaves at like 8 o'clock at night and you get back in 12 hours later, whichever way you're going, whether you're coming from Split or to Ancona. So people who are visiting Le Marche and want to go to Croatia, it's very easily accessed just by taking the overnight ferry.
Well, and that also means that this is a place that you can add on if you're doing a two-week trip and you want to do 1 week in Croatia and another week here. That would be one way of accessing it.
Yes, absolutely.
Excellent. And we're going to need to start to wrap this up. Are there other places we want to hit before we do so?
Another place that I should mention is Urbino, because Urbino is a World UNESCO Heritage Site, and it is the only World UNESCO Heritage Site in Le Marche. And the World UNESCO Heritage Site is Palazzo Ducale. So Urbino is located in inland in the northern section of Le Marche, close to the border of Tuscany and Emilia-Romagna.
Okay, so it's the Duke's Palace.
Yes, the Ducal Palace. Mm-hmm. That is Urbino. It is worth a visit to see. It's a very unique site. It's very large in size. And Urbino also happens to be the hometown, the birthplace of Raphael.
Oh.
So there's a lot of Renaissance art and influence. It was at the time when the Renaissance era, it was a very popular place for people to come, and especially because Raphael was from there, you can visit his home. It's a place that I think if you're coming to Le Marche that you should put on your bucket list.
Hmm.
The Palace of the Duke, the Palazzo Ducale, is considered probably the best preserved palace of its kind in Italy. When you visit it, you can go visit all the rooms that are accessible and the outdoor garden, and it's quite an experience. So something special if you like history.
I happen to like history.
Yes.
And if you are up in the area around Urbino, there's some great day trips that aren't too far away. We also have a really unique geological site called the Frassassi Caves. They were, I believe, discovered around the 1970s, and you can take a guided visit inside the caves. So that's really great for people who are into outdoors and want to see nature, something unique in Le Marche. As I had mentioned, Le Marche has a bit of everything. And if you're visiting that area, you'll find a lot of similar dishes to Tuscany because it borders Tuscany there. So it's a bit more heavier cuisine, a little bit more cucina povera. And I'm sure that would be probably the best place to try some wild boar in Le Marche.
Well, and if you're a country counter, which I know some of you are, and I have to admit to being one myself, you're 10, 15 miles from San Marino there. So you might as well get another country.
That's very true. Check another one off your list. From there, also, if you are going to San Marino, what is also worth a stop is the Castle of Gradara. And it's quite close to the water, but it would be, you could go there on your way up to San Marino. And there's a really great restaurant there called Mastinvecchio, if you're visiting, that is worth a visit.
It's actually one of the oldest restaurants in Italy as far as places where they have continuously served mm-hmm. food. So since the mid-1300s, they have records of a tavern being there.
So still new by Italian standards. But
yes.
Any other spots we want to mention before we get to some of our wrap-up questions?
Well,
you have many more you'd like to, I understand.
I know, I have too many things, but that's why we love our region. There's so much to see. But one thing I do think, if for the people who are foodies out there, because mm-hmm. I know a lot of people come to Italy, love food, it's really important, I think, to mention that we have one of Italy's 10 three-star Michelins, and it's in Senigallia. It's called Uliassi. And
that's near Ancona.
Okay.
And it's probably the cheapest three-star Michelin that you can eat at.
Yeah, I was reading on the Italian newspaper. It's the most affordable three-star Michelin in Europe right now. So I'm not sure what the price is, but if you are a foodie, maybe it's something you want to try.
Top priority, you can check that off your bucket list. But if you can't afford three-star Michelin and you still want something absolutely amazing, we have a restaurant that's called Il Tiglio. And it's located at the base of the Sibillini Mountains near a small town called Monte Monaco, which used to be an old Roman outpost. It's very unique cuisine, and the cuisine is very representative of the territory and inspired by the mountains. And it's absolutely stunning. You're right there in front of the Sibillini mountain range, and just over the hills behind you is Umbria.
Excellent. You are standing in the prettiest spot in all of La Marche. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
Piazza del Popolo. And I'm looking at the Palace of the Captains. which is when you stare, when you look at Piazza del Popolo, you see a building which has a clock above it and the steps that go up to the top. And that's the Palace of the Captains right beside Cafe Miletti.
Excellent. Well, and if you look at a map, we've really been going from south to north through the province. I cut you off before we got quite all the way through there, but that is the direction of our road trip if we were going to do some of those spots.
Absolutely.
One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Le Marche.
You know you're in Le Marche when you're eating Oliva L'Ascolano. Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
That's very true. When you're eating Olivo Ascolana, that's perfectly crisp.
It's just not something that you see served in anywhere else.
No, you said fried olives, and I'm like, what? I like olives. I would probably enjoy it, but that's not something I'm used to. Excellent. Yeah. And if you had to summarize this region in just three words, what three words would you pick?
A beautiful patchwork.
Excellent. We are talking again to Chantel and Giovanni from theitaliaonTour.com. And if we wanted to send people to theitaliaonTour.com to your best post on either La Marche or on Italy, where are we going to send them?
I would send them to our Italy Insider Guide, which gives them tips on how to experience Italy like a local. And that is essentially what Le Marche is. It's a great region to really experience the local Italian culture.
And if I asked you for one of your tips, which tip would you tell me?
This one is good for all regions, that you do not have to tip servers in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
Something that a lot of people ask about and are wary about. But in our country, it is not the norm.
Not expected. Yeah. You can, but it's not expected.
Well, Chantel and Giovanni, thank you so much for coming on Amateur Traveler, sharing with us your love for Italy and specifically for Le Marche.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
In news of the community, the 2020 trip to Turkey is sold out. We have as many people on that trip as we can take, plus a few others on a waiting list there. So I apologize if you were planning on coming, but I'm afraid you need to act a little faster. That we will plan on doing a trip in 2021. We're talking about doing the stand, so we'll see if that's going to be the number one choice again. You may recall that in last week's show on Kenya, we had some controversy because our guest Shane mentioned that he does not take malaria prophylactics, and I do, and I recommend that you do. But I don't think that I made that point strongly enough, because at least one of the listeners who chose to remain nameless wrote and said, "Dear Chris, I've enjoyed many episodes of Amateur Traveler, but I felt I had to respond to the recent episode about Kenya. In this episode, Shane was extremely dismissive of malaria as a problem in Kenya, and that he felt malaria prophylaxis unnecessary. According to the CDC, there's estimated to be 3.5 million cases of malaria, with more than 10,000 deaths in Kenya per year. While you were far more responsible urging listeners to seek advice at a medical travel clinic, I think Shane's statements were wholly irresponsible, uninformed, and could lead to somebody neglecting to seek appropriate advice and medication and get a potentially fatal infection. He should retract those statements, and please do not invite such a guest to appear on the episode ever." And then there's a link that this person gave me for the CDC, which I'll put in the show notes. As to inviting Shane again, that is something I reserve the right to do as the host, as always. But I really do appreciate the point here, as I tried to make on the show. One thing that I wasn't surprised, though, is I really wasn't surprised when he didn't recommend it. And that one big difference is that he lives in country. And I did some research, and I'm not a doctor, and I don't play one, which is why you should never take medical advice from me. You should definitely talk to your doctor, or even better yet, a travel clinic that is specialists in the area. But most locals don't take prophylactics. And the reason for that is most prophylactics, everyone I know, is not recommended for long-term use. So it's a very different thing. If you're living in country, you may not have that as a choice. Your doctor may recommend that you're doing just what Shane is doing, which is only trying to prevent mosquitoes from biting you. Because so many of the prophylactics, if you use them for a year or so, have negative side effects. They're fine for a month or two, and I certainly recommend them, and they sure beat getting malaria. And we've had other guests on the show, for instance, who have talked about getting malaria and nearly dying. think of Francis Tapon, who spent a couple months in every country in Africa, and I think he had malaria three times and nearly died at least once from malaria. And as I mentioned, I had a friend who did die in from malaria. He picked up in Tanzania, right near Kenya. Again, the problem being that he was a long-term resident of there, and there aren't a lot of great options for that, so far as I know. Now, one of the reasons I tell you not to take my advice is, even if I'm right about that today, I will probably be wrong about that tomorrow. And that's why, before you go on a trip, please do check with a travel clinic that's going to know the latest recommendations, because things get better. And there may be even something, if you're going to move to the area, there may be even something that you can take in a long-term basis as well. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. Don't forget mytravelcreditcard.com if you're looking for a new travel credit card. And thanks so much for listening.